Hi, this is David Frangioni, CEO and publisher of Modern Drummer Magazine. So excited about our new podcast, the Modern Drummer Podcast. This weekly podcast will bring Modern Drummer to life. Sit back and enjoy fresh, fun, and insightful conversations with today's top drummers, producers, musicians, beat makers, and craftsmen. Whether you're a professional, a hobbyist, drummer, musician, programmer, producer, or just love music, this show is for you. Every other week, the Modern Drummer Podcast will feature world-renowned producer, songwriter, and drummer, Narda Michael Walden. Narda Michael Walden's Upbeat is featured exclusively on the Modern Drummer Podcast.
Hey, everybody. This is your brother, Narda Michael Walden. So happy to be saying hi to you on this day. And welcome to our show, The Upbeat from Modern Drummer. And our episode for this day is a genius drummer from Baltimore. We call it Balmer. His name is Dennis Milton Chambers. He is a phenomenal, phenomenal drummer. And I think of him personally as Billy Cobham coming up in the next incarnation. He has those type of chops and fire and love for Billy, for all the great music. And I learned so much watching him, and his groove and pocket so deep. He played with Funkadelic. He played with James Brown a bit. He's played with everybody. And in particular, Mahavishnu had great shows with him at the Crossroads with Eric Clapton, where he played and just ripped it up in different time zones. And I was just so taken aback by him, which I always am. Then, of course, he went under the tutelage of the Santana Band for years and years and years with Carlos Santana. Dennis Chambers, we love him. We adore him. Please pay special attention to what he has to say. He's very heartfelt, very humble, and the chops are just phenomenal. God bless your heart. The groove is phenomenal. God bless your heart. Dennis is phenomenal. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. This is your brother, Narda Michael Walden, for Upbeat, Modern Drummer. Ow! Yo.
My brother. Yeah.
Love you, Dennis. Love you so much. Love you so much. How are
you,
my
brother? Love you.
This is a man's world. This is a man's world. But it wouldn't be nothing, nothing without Dennis Chambers. Yeah. We'd be lost in the wilderness. We'd be lost in bitterness. This is a man's world. Yeah. Ooh. Wouldn't be nothing without Dennis Chambers. Keep giving us so much, Dennis. So much love.
Thank you, man.
So much passion through the years. We're so honored to be with you today.
Same back, my brother. Same back. Same back.
And James Brown said to sing that for you because you and I both adore him and what he gave us.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. That is all absolutely right. True.
Okay. So let's start it out, bro. First of all, how are you? Tell me how you're doing.
I'm doing okay, man. Well, I'm doing fine, actually. Yeah. I went to my doctors yesterday, and they said everything is great with my liver and stuff. So I'm great, man.
You look wonderful.
I'm just living life now.
Yes, that's right. I woke up this morning, and I saw you on Facebook. There was a post of you playing drums on a groove with Coffee. Coffee, the guitarist? Am I saying it right?
You probably are. You do a lot of recordings.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's hard to remember certain things, but I remember that name, Coffee, though.
Yeah. It's a really cool groove.
It's It's an old recording, I think.
Yeah, old recording, a cool groove of yours.
Yeah,
boom,
yeah, yeah,
God,
yeah.
Boom, boom, God, boom, boom type groove, you know, laying yeah. down. So, so consistent, which is why we love you, Dennis. This is why I want to talk to you, because you've kept the funk alive. Like James Brown would tell you, you know, you's one of the only one keeping the funk alive. You're keeping the funk alive, Dennis.
Well, so
anything you want to say about that?
Well, I, you know, I'm one of a few. You know, I mean, you have somebody like Chris Dave, who's just a bad, bad, bad boy, you know, and then you still have, you know, a lot of guys such as James Gadson, who's still alive and he's still keeping the funk alive. And I really admire him. I mean, he's such a beautiful, beautiful guy, and he gave so much.
Yes.
He taught us all a lot, yes. You know.
Okay, stop right there. For the people who may not know the depth, say something about James Gadson that really moves you. Just one thing you could say so that people at Boston and then the Berklee schools can go, oh, yeah, right.
I mean, you know, I mean, let's go with, you know, some of the Pointer Sisters records, some of the, my all of a sudden my mind go blank.
Okay.
But the Bill Withers yes, stuff. Grandma, I mean, that, you know, Use Me Up.
Right.
You know, that was some serious funk, man.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then you got Bernard Purdy, you know, who's still doing it too, you know? And
absolutely. We adore Bernard. Bernard taught us so much.
But you guys taught a lot, you know? And I mean, you alone had done some unbelievable things. And my ears were always open. To you.
Thank you, Dennis.
And you know, all this, I mean, the Ma Vishnus, the Michael Jacksons, the Whitney Houstons, and the Aretha Franklins. And you know, when I walked into your office or your achievement room, I don't know if that's what you called it, but that's how I saw it. Mm-hmm. And I looked at that room and I go, like, oh my God, I had no idea you did all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I brought the records and you know, or brought the CDs. But you know, with CDs, they don't show you credits too much. You know, you have to get a magnifying glass to see it. But when I walked into that room, I'm like, Jesus Christ. I knew that one side of things. I knew about the Aretha Franklin, but I didn't know about the, you know, Michael Jackson's and the Whitney, you know, I mean, I knew a little bit about Whitney Houston, but I didn't know the depth of it.
Oh, thank you, Dennis.
Blew me away, dude.
Well, you blow us away, Dennis. That's why we're so happy to have you on this great show called Upbeat. And our fans are really wanting to know, you know, about your makeup. How it is, first of all, you play so powerfully, Dennis. How you can play so swiftly, so quickly, so effortlessly when you want to. How you can also be doing all that and just have the groundedness in the groove and the funk at the same time. Those three things alone come together with you so effortlessly that we're kind of like, we're always like, knowing you're dangerous. We just know you're dangerous. And anything you want to say about that, please, the floor is yours.
I mean, okay, I'm a regurgitation of what happened before me.
Okay.
And, you know, as the funk and the groove and stuff like that, you know, I grew up in the 60s just like we all did. And yeah. Growing up in that time, and music is so different from then until now.
Yes.
I had James Brown in my life. You know, I had, you know, the Stax recordings with Al Jackson, you know, in my life. I had Zigaboo Mona Lisa, you know. I had, you know, David Garibaldi.
Yes,
you know,
from Oakland, right across the way.
And now some of these guys weren't hard hitters, but the groove, it taught you about the groove, you know.
Yes.
You know, we didn't grow up in the era of YouTube. We didn't have YouTube. We had vinyl, a needle, stylus. Mm-hmm. Drop it on and you try to pick things up from there.
Yes.
I'm self-taught. You know, yes. I didn't go to school for music or anything like that, but I was taught by the best by listening.
Yes.
And then, you know, and then reading the back then when we had albums, you know, reading the credits and find out who did what. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, you know, with listening to Motown, I always wanted to find out who those guys were, but at that time you didn't know because they didn't list them.
Yes.
But then, you know, like in 30 years later, here we are. Now we're finding out who those guys were.
That's right. That's right.
And for me, I you know, playing with Parliament Funkadelic being in Detroit, you know, trying to find out who did what and never met those guys. Now that I know, I wish I could go back, you know, when I was there a lot and meet those guys, man, just to say thank you, at least just to say thank you.
So Dennis, just so that we understand more about you, if you don't mind, take us just on a journey through where you're from Baltimore, Baltimore. Tell us about that a little bit, and then connect the dots a little bit so we understand how you unfolded. You know what I mean? So that those who really want to know more about you can really go, God, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. So just kind of open our eyes from the very beginning a bit. Can you please?
Yeah. Let me see. Well, first of all, I grew up in Baltimore, Maryland. I was born right here in Baltimore, Maryland.
In what year?
And, 1959.
Okay. Thank you.
And I say 1962, I think. 62, maybe. My mom, who was a singer, and she put a band together. She was somewhat of a local celebrity because she sang in Motown for just a short amount of time.
Okay.
And she didn't like it too much, as I found out. And so she came home and put a band together. The band would rehearse at my mom's apartment. And okay, my name is really not Dennis. It's Milton Chambers.
I love it.
But the nickname came from I was a menace. I was a true menace, especially to the kids in the neighborhood.
Right.
So the only thing that kept me still was when my mom would rehearse and the drummer would play, and I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was the he had a champagne sparkle Gretschkin. And I don't know if it was the shininess of the drums or the gold things he was hitting, the cymbals, and the volume of it, and I was like in awe, just sitting there watching him.
Yeah.
And of course, at that time we had, my mom is she had a serious love for music, so we had like jazz, you know, we had R&B, soul, you know, all kind of music, even classical music. I remember my mom would play sometimes.
Beautiful.
So when the band would finish rehearsing, I would pick up knives and forks and things and stop banging on the furniture. And many a days I would get reprimanded for two of that. But thank God my father was upholsterer, you know, so he would fix recover the furniture and stuff like that, or cover the furniture. Or recover the furniture. Yeah, he would fix it. They brought me a drum kit when I was like 3 years old, or somewhere around in there.
Okay, young.
You know, just to see if, you know, if I really, you know, if this was a fad or not. So my neighbor's kids, you know, tore their drum kit up. You know, somebody, I think we were wrestling or something, they fell on it, you know, and then flattened it, and I stuffed it under the bed, and I became, as my mom told me, it was a change for me. My whole thing had changed, and I was depressed. You know, I didn't want her to find the drums. I didn't want my family to find the drums.
Right.
Of course, my mom went to clean my room out, and there's the drum kit under the bed. And then she knew what was happening. So they brought me another drum kit.
Okay.
They went down to this place called Tez Music Store.
Tez.
Ted's.
Ted's.
Yeah, T-E-D. They went down to Ted's and they brought a kit. It was like they custom built the thing. It was like a 14 or 16 inch floor tom. And they put a mount system on it, which had one rack tom. Like I think the tom tom was, I think it was either a 10 or a 12. I can't remember now.
Okay.
And they brought like a little snare drum and a 14 inch floor.
Wow.
And you know, some, you know, like real cheap cymbal stands that came down low, low as possible. Yeah. And I just started from there. I started listening to records, you know, and I thought, wow, in order to become a drummer, you have to learn all this music that my mom was playing in the house.
Right. Okay.
And of course it was a lot of funk, you know, and a lot of soul music So I would mimic records all the time, and practice. You never caught me without a pair of sticks in my hand. I'm always and if I didn't have sticks in my hand, I'm always thinking of rhythms and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I would even like listen to like motorcycles, Harley Davidson motorcycles, just to hear the rhythms. Yeah. And try to figure out what those rhythms were. I was so crazy with it, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course, in school, I failed a lot of my classes because I couldn't hear anything but rhythms.
Got it.
You know, so. But thank God for me growing up in Baltimore, because a lot of artists, a lot of groups that I listened to came through Baltimore. Mm-hmm. You know, like the guys from New York, if they were, you know, doing a tour going to the South, they would stop in Baltimore, mm-hmm. you know? So I was able to go to some of those concerts. Not a lot, but I went to a few concerts at that time just to see, you know, who these guys were and how they played. And then also back then in the 70s, we had this, I'm just jumping ahead. Okay, so one day, this guy was going home.
Okay,
and I lived on Preston Street, right off of Broadway and Preston Street on the east side of Baltimore.
Right.
This guy was going home on Preston Street and he was caught in traffic and he heard some drumming going on, you know, somebody playing drums. He pulled the car over, followed his ear to my mom's apartment, mm-hmm. knocked on the door, and my mom answered the door and she asking him, well, what do you want? He was like, well, is there somebody up in here playing drums? And she said, yes, my son. So to make a long story short, back in them days, you know, everything was pretty much, it was a more innocent time. So she let him in, came up to my room, and I'm in there wailing, you know, playing. Mm. And I'm 6 years old at that time, you know, so.
Okay.
Or maybe five, I can't remember, five or six.
Okay.
So he's sitting there like, amazed at what he's hearing. Come to find out, he was a bass player in this band called The Fingertips. And the guy's name was Rat. I don't know why they called him Rat, but he convinced my mom to take me to a rehearsal place where the band was going to rehearse. And I went and I played, and they were like, kind of, I wouldn't say amazed, just surprised to see a young guy mm-hmm. who can play, you know, some R&B music.
Yes.
Or soul music.
Yes.
And convinced my mom to let me play in the band.
Wow.
You know, as long as they don't have a lot of gigs or something, you know, just, mm-hmm. you know, like gigs on the weekend or something.
Yes.
And that's what I did. I played in that band. I was 6 years old, played in that band for a long while. And thank God the club where we played, it was a place called the Peyton Place on Pennsylvania Avenue, where the Royal Theater and all that stuff used to be. That whole block was like just nothing but music. Okay. That little spot, Peyton Place, the drummer, the owner, Henry Baker, he called me Shorty. Shorty, if you want to see a serious drummer play, you know, have your mom or have somebody bring you down here, you know, blah, 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 what day, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, well, who's playing? You like jazz? I'm like, well, I'm new at it. You know, there's some things I like. You heard of Miles Davis? Oh yeah, I heard of Miles Davis. Yeah, well, come on back. Miles is going to be here playing. And I didn't, you know, at the time I didn't know the serious of all of this, right? So,
right.
I go back on that night, and they would sit me in a corner. You know, where, you know, if the cops came in, you know, they wouldn't see me. Plus, back in them days, cops used to patrol the neighborhood on horseback. Oh. And there was a lot of payola, you know, so they would pay some of the cops to, especially the nights that I played, they would pay the cops, you know, a few dollars, and they would just go buy that place. So anyway, I go in, I sit down. This little guy comes out, he sits behind the drums. And man, I remember that drum kit. It was a Gretsch kit. It was a white satin drum kit. And they introduced Miles. He's on the bandstand. He counts off and all hell broke loose.
Mm-hmm.
The drummer was Tony Williams.
That's right. That's right.
Tony Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, the stuff was so over my head. I didn't understand any of it, but I knew I was seeing something great.
Yes.
Especially when seeing somebody at that age, like 7 years old, maybe 7 or 8 years old, and seeing how the guy worked his left hand, and the right hand had a different zip code mm-hmm. from the rest of the drum kit, mm-hmm. and the hi-hat, I never saw anybody play a hi-hat like that, which is four beats to the bar,
mm-hmm.
no matter what the tempo was.
Got it.
And the bass drum was it was like a different mind. It was like four-way independence. That's the way right. I saw it then. Mm-hmm. And he sounded like it should have been the Tony Williams band featuring Miles Davis. That's what it sounded like to me.
Got it. Yeah.
And Tony played like the cops were outside waiting for him, and this was going to be the last night he was going to play.
Okay.
That's the way it sounded, man. And mm-hmm. it was just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he just blew my mind. I went home after sitting there, the concert's over. And this is around about the time they had just done the Miles Smiles record.
Oh, okay.
It was during that era. So I go home, I couldn't really talk that much. People were asking me questions and I just wasn't talking, And I couldn't sleep for 48 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Was somewhere around in there. Mm-hmm. For 2 days, I couldn't sleep. Because I just heard rhythms and possibilities. I mean, he opened me up to like all the different possibilities of how to work the hands, how to work the foot, the ankle control, all that stuff, And I just at that time I was a big sponge, just open for knowledge how to play this instrument I went and try to start playing jazz, like taking a rod cymbal and play a dotted eighth note and try to play that evenly, slowly, and also I was also told that and that time when you practice, try to play everything slow, and especially get into your rudiments and work on those and work on things slow. And then once you feel comfortable with it, build it up to a certain speed. And if that falls apart a little bit, stop, remember that tempo, and then start from there, work on that tempo until you get it nice and even, then go back to the slow thing, work up to that tempo where it got raggedy
mm-hmm.
and work there and then push it from there up.
Hmm.
So doing all of that and watching all these great musicians like Art Blakey would come to town. In fact, I opened for Art Blakey when I was 13 or 14 years old. And he was trying to get me to go here in David Snyder. No, not David Snyder. It was Walt, the piano player. I can't think of his name right now. Walt,
okay, that's cool.
Anyway, Walt, who's a great pianist who also worked with Louis Belson and people like that. I can't think of his name though. Sorry.
Okay.
Like Art would come to town, Max would come to town, all these jazz drummers, great jazz drummers would come to town. And Clive, with James Brown would come to town. And so I'm just, in any time there was any time I had that I could go, I would go.
Right.
And I would even in my teenage years, if I had a gig and found out somebody was playing that I wanted to see, I would just cancel my gig. I would get somebody else to sub because I wanted to see the masters. I even saw you. I saw you here in Baltimore. That blew me away. It blew me away big time. Hmm. But, so doing all of that, I was just studying and working on my craft and just studying, working and practicing with the I used to play in a marching band too. I forgot to tell you that.
I love it. I'm about to ask you, how do you learn these rudiments? You said you're all self-taught by the records, which I understand. That's the best records, the best teachers. But you are so intricate. So that speak about that in your marching band.
Yeah, I was in a marching band not long, because it looked great when you're standing on the side watching marching band.
Okay, until you got to marching.
But when you got to get, when you got to put, you know, wear that hot uniform on a hot summer day, like in July.
Right.
A hot summer day.
Right.
And you got your outfit on and you got this big old drum.
Right.
Who's right off the side of my left side on my hip and marching. Ah!
Yeah. We marching, man. Right. We marching.
So, you know, marching with this thing, man. And that got old, you know, especially if, you know, you march for about like a mile or two.
Oh, yeah.
And it carrying a heavy drum.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Man, I did everything I could to get out of it. I think I faked a heart attack that didn't. It didn't go over well with my mom.
Okay.
You know, she beat the crap out of me. But so I went through all of that and still like working on practicing and getting a, you know, better drum kit and you know, studying the drums, taking the drums apart, every piece of it apart, and learning what things were, how, what did what, and why they did what they did, and you know, of course, playing and practicing with phone books under my arms and practicing with a mirror, you know, in front of me, just to see, you know, watch the body, how it works, and try to play intense and calm, you know, looking in the mirror, you know, just to get the posture down, make sure I sit straight up, you know, and all that stuff. Because that's what I saw my favorite drummers do, you know.
Wow.
And I wasn't able to talk to them at the time, but I figured that's what they did, you know. And then reading some things about, you know, when I could, reading some things about, you know, some articles about Buddy Rich and you know, Billy Cobham and Tony in my teenage years and going back to the drawing board and work these things out, you know. But the power for me, it actually came from watching Billy Cobham.
Okay.
You know, watching Billy Cobham, like, on an unbelievable night with the Mahavishnu, as you know.
Yes, I do. Incredible. My mind is still blown. Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it sounded like there was like four lions on stage and somebody threw in a piece of meat. That's what it sounded like. It was, the energy was like, you know.
That's right.
Really intense, but also not only intense, but also delicate, you know, because they would play some pieces that were very, very, very low in volume. And then, you know, like Jan would play a piano and John would pick up acoustic guitar and they would play these beautiful pieces. So that taught me, you know, about dynamics.
Yes.
You know, and, you know, listening to Mahavishnu all those years and that taught me a hell of a lot. And then I saw you with him and that blew me away because I always thought before I saw you, I always thought that you played match grip.
Okay.
And then when I saw you play traditional grip, playing all that stuff, traditional grip, playing with that power, I'm like, there's no way you can hit a drum playing like that match grip. But yet I watched you and I saw you do it. And that took me back to, you know, playing match grip again. Because at the time when I saw Billy play, I switched from match I switched from traditional to match.
Right.
Okay. And then I saw you play. And then I went match grip back to traditional. And started working on both styles, you know, both technique or hand techniques. And practicing on, I used to practice a lot on pillows because that's what I learned in the marching days.
Okay.
And with big sticks, those big tree trunk sticks of my, I used to have, sit there and work on that very slow and build up things and always listening to music, you know, and that taught me how to play music.
Wow.
You know, not just, you know, playing a lot of chops, you know, but even there was a phase I went through where I didn't want to do anything but just play chops.
Okay.
But then I realized the guys who did that, they weren't getting any gigs. They weren't getting in. There were no gigs. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's like everybody. Oh, yeah, he can play, but he can't play. You know, he can't play music, and so that taught me like, okay, man, I got to go back and you know get back into the groove of how to you know play music and or not get back into it, but just you know just study more or focus more on the playing music,
yes,
and try to be the best that I can be, sitting behind that kit, playing all different styles of music.
Okay.
By listening to all the great guys who did it.
Okay. Let me bring you back to just around the time when you'd be going to Detroit. How did you hook up with Parliament Funkadelic? How did that happen? Because I see that as monumental. So just break that down for just a moment.
Yeah, that came about. There was a guy named Gary Mudbone Cooper who used to sing with a band called Madhouse here. And that group was more or less like one of the groups were like E.F. Hutton. When they played, everybody came out to listen.
Okay.
They were on, you know, shows with like Graham Central Station, and they were just as good as Graham Central Station. Mm-hmm. And then they opened for George one time, and George liked the band. He wanted to try to, you know, grab some of the members. And those guys, you know, at that time they were thinking right. So they had one guy, this guy named Gary Mudbone Cooper, who sang in the band, got with George, and he did a lot of recording, you know, with the guys at that time. They needed a bass player. This guy named Rodney Ski Curtis. Oh, I'm sorry. My lights went out.
Yeah, okay.
I got some motion lights down here. Sorry about that.
That's good.
I thought I turned it off. Mm. Rodney Ski Curtis joined them. And George just absolutely loved Skeet, you know, and we all do. I mean, because the guy's like one of the funkiest bass players alive.
What's his name again?
Rodney Skeet Curtis.
Rodney Skeet Curtis.
Yes. All right.
Okay.
And last, before the epidemic, he was working with Maceo Parker for some years.
Oh, okay.
But the guy is serious, you know, and all the bass players actually really know him. You know, and anyway, so he got in the band. The whole time while he was there, he was plotting, trying to get me to get in there. Mm-hmm. And every time the chair opened up, it closes that quick.
Yeah.
George would like grab, you know, like some of the James Brown drummers and that didn't work out. And then, you know, when I came in, Skeet got me a ticket, flew me to, I think it was Atlanta, I think it was. And had me to play at Soundcheck in front of Bernie Worrell.
Wow, I love Bernie.
And
yeah.
Bernie, you know, loved what I did, or mm-hmm. what I was doing at the, you know, on stage at that time. And
yes.
And so when the chair opened up again, it didn't open up with Funkadelic, it opened up for Brides of Funkenstein, one of the offshoot bands. So I played in that band on tour with Funkadelic, Parliament Funkadelic. And, you know, I think Funkadelic at that time had four drummers, if I remember correctly, and I'm not sure, but I knew for sure there was Tyrone Lampkin, there was Cordell Boogie Monsoon, there was Frank Waddy, and there was somebody else. I can't remember who that was.
Tiki Forward.
Now Tiki was out of the band at that time, but he was still come around at that time.
Because all we knew, Ryman, Michigan, Kalamazoo, we knew about Tiki.
Tiki
was famous. We never saw him, but we heard about that. Boom, scat, boom, 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 scat, boom, boom.
Yeah,
scat. That was that's Tiki's beat.
Well, yeah, and Tiki is, as far as I'm concerned, he's one of the founders of go-go.
Yeah, but exactly.
It's not go-go as what go-go turned out to be now.
Yeah,
but he was that. He was so groove oriented.
Yes,
And from what I understand, I don't know this for sure, but he played, from what they tell me, he played on the Delphonics records.
Oh.
And that made sense because the guy, when you listen to a lot of the Delphonics music, The drummer is so laid back. That left hand.
Yes.
It's so laid back, you know.
Yes. Well, like, and, La 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 means I love you. Would that be him or would that be a guy, Earl? There's another guy named Earl, Earl Palmer. I saw him in the, they were honoring him just this morning from Philadelphia.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You know, it was either him or Earl. But
yeah, okay.
I heard that Tiki played on a lot of those records.
I'm going to find out.
I don't know which song.
I'm a big fan of that stuff, man.
Yeah, me too.
God, man.
And that's another thing that taught me, music that taught me how to play, you know, because listening to a guy that can play those songs and make it sound so elastic.
Yes.
And the groove is not just here. Mm-hmm. The groove is like here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's just because of the way he plays that back beat. And you know it wasn't a mistake or anything because he's consistent back there.
Yes, yes. It's almost like we would think it'd be dragging, but it's so emotional, it's not dragging.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? People can say, oh, you're dragging. But in fact, no, it's so much emotion.
Yep, yep.
You know? Yep. And they would, like you say, consistent, would hold it there. It's like, dang. Yep. It hypnotize you.
You can almost set your watch to that backhand, mm-hmm. you know, so it was right, consistent, always there at that spot.
Yeah.
And no matter what song it was, you know, Somebody Loves You Girl, I think that's the name of the song. Mm-hmm. Somebody Loves You Girl, or Somebody Love You. The snare drum was like, you know, the drummer was so way back in the beat, you know.
So again,
that was some beautiful music, man.
Come on to the Parliament now. Just want to, what year would it be?
Oh, right.
Yeah, what year would it be?
So that was 1979, I believe.
79,
okay. Yeah.
Okay.
And I came on board and George, and I think, man, my lights keep going out here.
Okay, it's all right. It's exciting.
Yeah. 79, playing with the Brides. George saw me play with them and checked it out. And then he asked me to play in the band. Well, he didn't even ask me, actually. They just put me on the drums, and next thing I know, I'm in the band with Funkadelic.
Okay.
And since the Brides of Funkenstein and Parliament was on the same tour under the same umbrella, it was the same pay. So nobody actually officially said you're in. I was just stuck with the drums all night long.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
but what an education! I mean,
oh yeah,
all over the world, and I mean this, all over the world, any drummer couldn't have a better education than playing in that situation all night long with those people who all they wanted was that groove had to be right, strong.
Yeah.
I mean, strong, mighty.
Yeah.
God, man. Yeah. Dang.
Some people they forget that I actually played in that band, you know, especially when I played with Scofield. Everything I did with Scofield on up, people are very surprised when they go back and see some credits, you know, with me on it with Funkadelic. And it wasn't that many, but I've done some recordings with them. And of course, a lot of touring. That band since it was Parliament Funkadelic with two different names, two different record companies. You know, it's like you go out on tour for like, 5 or 6 months with the group that had the record, hit record. And then you go home for a month, maybe. And then you're back on the road for another 4 or 5 months with Funkadelic. Mm-hmm. If Funkadelic had to hit, vice versa. Mm-hmm. So you stayed on the road all the time. Mm-hmm. But we were young, man. You know, that's you right. could do that when you're that's young. Right. You couldn't pay me to do that now, mm-hmm. you know. Okay. But there, it was a lot of playing, and that band was very loud, and I think that contributed to the way I hit the drums. You know, when I hit them hard.
That's right. That's right.
And except for, you know, if I'm playing in a jazz thing, then I lighten up.
Yeah.
Not much, but I lighten up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then from the Funkadelic period, where did you kind of just give me like the idea how you kind of maneuvered?
Well, I mean, you know, with Funkadelic, well, prominent Funkadelic, I came in, had to, you know, kind of start with studying a lot of, you know, Tiki, and then the guys that came before me, Tiki Forward, Jerome, Tyrone Lampkin,
yes,
Jerome Braley,
yes,
Jerome Braley was, I think he was the last greatest drummer that played with him.
Okay.
He was the one that wrote Tear the Roof Off the Sucker.
Okay. Very cool.
And his history goes way back. His thing goes back, far as I remember, with the Five Stair Steps.
Oh my God. Yeah.
I'm a big fan. And he goes back with all of that.
I'm a massive, massive fan. But that's Curtis Mayfield again, whose birthday is yesterday, today. We're celebrating Curtis Mayfield. That's all.
Wow.
Curtis helped write, produce, make that thing happen. Those little genius kids, you know, Kenny Burke on the bass and all that. Clarence, the great singer. Those guys were geniuses, man. And in Chicago, they were superstars. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Were they from Chicago?
Yeah, that's Chicago, man. So my dad's from Chicago. So we go there to visit. That's when we go, oh, my God, you know. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Five Stair Steps, he was with in that band, like that song, Ooh Child.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And Someday, you know those songs, and you listen to the drummer play, and that was Tyrone. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sorry, that was Jerome Braley, you know, that played on those songs. And, you know, but by me, you know, being, you know, like just studying these guys, you know, I would try to find anything and everything, you know, that my favorite drummer or a drummer that caught my ear, I would go and try to do research on these people. Yes. And that's one thing, you know, like these, I feel that younger drummers don't do these days. They don't do any studying. They don't want to know, you know. I mean, they don't even want to know how to do homework, you know, when they're in school. So they don't want to study that stuff. So you know darn well they don't want to study, you know, whatever they're doing musically. You know, whatever instruments they're playing, they just know who the guy is that they're listening to. And they just locked in on him. And they don't know his background, who he listened to, where he came from, none of that. They don't care. Just lock in on him. And then history sort of gets lost.
Well, this is why we're talking to you, Dennis, so it won't get lost. Because we know that you are a real aficionado, a lover, a passionate musician. And you keep alive the people before you. Now during your reign, and you're seeing the future, like you're always very keen to let me know about, hey, don't sleep on this cat, Virgin Donato, or don't sleep on this other cat. That, you know, you're always like pointing out the future cats to me as well. So you know, you're really into it, man. I know that about you.
Yeah.
Hey, well, I know you enjoyed hearing Dennis speak from his heart. So many relevant stories that we can use in our day-to-day life going forward, in our musical lives. And we really want to inspire the drummers and the musicians in the world and all people in the world with our interviews with Upbeat. And we want to thank the genius Dennis Chambers, who we love so much, for giving his total heart to music, his total love and devotion and passion to music. We want to thank him for his words and for his insights and his inspirations. Love you, Dennis. Thank you, everybody. God bless you. Stay tuned for our show, Upbeat with Nardo Michael Wald, Martin Drummer. Ow!
Thank you, everybody, for watching this week's Modern Drummer podcast. Stay tuned for next week's episode exclusively on Podcast One. Until then, stay safe and healthy, and thanks for listening and watching.